Hello, and welcome to Color Me Healthy, a production of the Community Health Center of Buffalo. Color Me Healthy focuses on wellness for communities of color and how we can all develop a better quality of life. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by Community Health Center employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the Community Health Center or any of its officials. This program is meant to be used for general informational purposes only. While this program provides information on such topics as health and wellness, the subject matter discussed is not intended to be a substitute for seeking care and service from a health professional. In all instances, even where a guest is a licensed physician, listeners should not view the opinions and perspectives expressed on the program as medical advice. Listeners are also encouraged to pay attention to the credentials and professional qualifications of the program's guests. In instances where a guest is not a licensed medical professional, listeners should note that the guest is not legally authorized to practice medicine in any setting. Listeners are always encouraged to consult with their own personal health care professional.
Welcome to another edition of Color Me Healthy. I'm your host, Carl Schallhorn. On today's show, I'd like to introduce Dr. Timothy McDaniel, who is one of our primary care physicians at the Community Health Center of Buffalo. Dr. McDaniel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, of course, we want to let our listeners know about maybe your background, your education, your experience. So why don't you tell us about that?
Well, as you can probably tell from my little accent, I'm originally from Brooklyn. And I came here to Buffalo to go to medical school back in 1984 at UB. Did my residency here at UB and graduated in 1992. And ever since, I've been practicing primary care in Buffalo.
So you've, of course, worked in what kind of settings have you been in?
For the first 20 years, I was a clinical assistant professor at UB. And so a lot of teaching of medical students, interns, and residents, in addition to practicing medicine, seeing patients. And in 2014, I took a little turn in my career and decided to just focus on primary care and seeing patients. And that's when I came to the Community Health Center of Buffalo.
Excellent, excellent. And I know, of course, you do a lot of things here, I mean, offering the services to patients. Tell me a little bit more specifically about what you do with your patients. I know, obviously, primary care is sort of an umbrella term, we could say, but what do you do primarily with your folks?
You're right. Primary care is an umbrella of few disciplines. I am an internist, so internal medicine, so adult medicine, 18 and over. So I practice and I take care of adults.
Okay. And in this experience working with adults, what do you see as being some of the primary care, healthcare issues with your patients? Of course, we know that in the African-American, Latino communities, and even some of the people we have here who are from other countries, there may be some specific health issues specific to them that might not be with other populations.
What I try to do in my practice is to empower patients. I find that medicine, the history of medicine has been very patriarchal, meaning the doctor dictates the care. So many times patients are not actively engaged in their care and the decision making. And for me, I try to encourage patients to be active in their care. And I find that particularly patients of color many times are intimidated because the person who's taking care of them doesn't look like them. And so there's that intimidation factor. They're afraid to ask questions because they don't want to insult the provider or have the provider assume that they're challenging them. So I find that a lot of people of color are very quiet when it comes to their health care, and they kind of just go along even if they don't agree always with the care that they're getting.
That's interesting. So, you know, we know here at Community Health Center, we have providers, a very diverse provider staff. So I think that's certainly an advantage we have with individuals coming in, that there's that, I guess you could say, relatability, you know, that often happens, which is really important. Now, you're talking about some of the health issues. Can you be more specific with some of the things that are really important for people to know to say be prepared when they come in for appointments? Because I know, of course, even myself, when I go to the doctor, you get what? Usually, if it's just a general checkup, you get 10, 15 minutes, and then, you know, you got to go. So how would you advise folks, or not advise, but what are some things you would recommend for people to do?
So I would say when you make an appointment, I would say a day or so before that appointment, think about what you want to get out of that appointment. Why did you make an appointment? What do you want to address at that appointment? So many times I will have patients come in and I will ask them, why are you here? And they will say, I don't know. And then 2 or 3 days later, they'll call me back with lots of questions. So you want to prepare for your appointment the same way the nurses and the practice and the doctor prepares for you. You want to prepare for your appointment. If you want to review your medication, if you have a particular complaint about any symptoms. So I just recommend that patients think about that appointment. What do they want to address at their appointment? And what do they want to leave with at the end of the appointment?
And so in your experience, what are some of the primary health conditions that you see that are going on?
Mostly what I see here prevalent is obesity, diabetes, hypertension, and probably what's really underrated is stress.
Which is, of course, the area that I, you know, my background is in mental health. So, of course, there's that connection between stress and physical health. That's one of the things, that has been proven through research.
Yes.
So that's good to know. So, you know, for individuals who do have any of these kinds of conditions, it's really important to kind of ask those questions of your doctor and be educated. Now, let me just makes me think of something too. So say you do get a patient who comes in and say you discover that they have, say, high blood pressure. And of course, that can be alarming. Right? Because they might need medication or adjustments to the diet or whatever. But they go home and they go online, they go to WebMD or whatever the resource is, rather, and they begin to, you know, learn things that may or may not be accurate. So what would you say about that?
We call Dr. Google.
Dr. Google.
That's what we say. Dr. Google. I think educating yourself is very important. You have to make sure that you go to reputable websites. And I am always referring people to reputable websites. And I think that's the key, because so many websites are designed to cover liability. So when you look up different diagnoses, if you have a pink eye, you're probably going to see part of the diagnosis, possible tumor. Because obviously they have to cover themselves.
Right, right.
So talk to your physician. Ask the physician or provider if they have any websites that you can go to. I wouldn't just go randomly just Googling or, you know, any websites, because there's a lot of really, really bad information out there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've seen that recently. I mean, not to get too far off topic, but, even the anti-vaccine movement, there's a lot of... Well, some people are saying misinformation about that's going on, that people are just going and finding these websites that are really not very helpful. And we know that through through the years, when people were being treated appropriately or even vaccinated, the problem was not prevalent. But now all of a sudden we have this epidemic.
Yes. Like with anything, the internet is great, but also you have to be aware that there's a lot of bad information, misinformation out there. And so that's why I will actually suggest or even write down specific websites that I think are reputable and have my patients research.
So for those out there who might be listening who may not have a primary care physician, we know oftentimes the emergency room is their primary care physician. And of course, in my background, I've done some work that is aligned, I guess you could say, with Medicaid redesign, which is, of course, not to get into all those details, but that's a big movement here in New York State. But I think it's called the 20-80 rule. 20% of the people use 80% of the services. So often when individuals are, either dealing with Medicaid or whatever, or for that matter, anybody for that matter, who doesn't have a primary care physician, they go to the emergency room. So why would you recommend that someone, obviously, I mean, it's kind of an obvious question, but why? What are the important aspects of having a primary care physician?
My patients know that I always like analogies, comparisons. So I'll put it plainly. If you have a car, hopefully you get your oil change every 3,000, 5,000 miles, tires rotated, filter change. You're not going to wait until the engine starts overheating before you go to the mechanic, because it'll cost you a lot of money. Mm. Same thing with using the emergency room. Unfortunately, people are waiting until they have symptoms or signs, and actually even waiting even longer. Something that could have been maybe detected on an annual physical exam. So you want to have a primary care physician because it's about preventative health. Mm-hmm. Catching blood pressure, elevated blood pressure before you actually have symptoms, which can be years. Your blood pressure can be elevated for years before you actually start having symptoms. Mm-hmm. And by the time you have symptoms, it can be a serious problem.
Right, right. I'll just share, my own personal story. My mother, frankly, from a very early age, I remember her, she always had health issues. And I remember when I was young, hypertension was one of those things, high blood pressure. And then eventually she developed diabetes, later in life, which then led to renal failure. So she had those issues. But I, recollecting that time, and of course, I've tried to take on this practice myself, but of course, it's easy to say what could have been done. But if she had maybe acted earlier or sooner to take care of those issues, as opposed to not managing diet and no exercise and a lot of stress in her life, things might have, turned out differently. She might have lived longer. She died at the age of 66, very young. Very young. So I know, like I said, from firsthand experience, it was just, really heartbreaking, to watch that happen over time. On the other hand, my father lived to be 87. And even though he had a couple of health issues, Parkinson's type disease, and then it was a supranuclear palsy. Mm-hmm. And so toward the end of his life, he, even though he had these health issues, leading up to that, he was very healthy in terms of how he ate and his lifestyle. So, I mean, and usually women outlive men, a lot of times. But, of course, he certainly lived longer than my mother did. But it was just a kind of interesting to look at, see the differences, and how that was how it was done. So, yeah, certainly I think, you're making a good point when it comes to the idea of prevention, in terms of how people can approach their own healthcare. I just want to let our folks out there know that we're talking to Dr. Timothy McDaniel, who is one of the primary care physicians here at the Community Health Center Buffalo. So I guess this kind of goes back to one of the things you said earlier regarding why people might have the feeling that they can't talk to their primary care physician. But why do you think some people are reluctant to go to see a doctor?
There are a number of reasons, but one very interesting reason I find, which, when you think about it, doesn't really make a lot of sense. Sometimes people are afraid to know. I've had people who will sit on chest pain, take Tums, Rolaids, not getting any better for days or weeks. They don't want to go see the doctor because they don't want that diagnosis of a heart attack or heart disease. Now, you and I would say, wow, you want to know that and get it taken care of. So some of it is fear. Mm-hmm. Fear of the unknown, or sometimes fear of the known. I've had patients who come in who know they've had a particular serious problem, but they were just so afraid of hearing the provider say it, because then it's real. And I have so many people say, I won't claim that. Right. You'll be surprised. I have people come in the office. I tell them you have high blood pressure, diabetes, or whatever. And they say, I'm not going to claim that. And my response to them, well, it's claimed you. So either you take care of it or it will take care of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think one of the things we learned over time is that you have to take care of yourself to have that better quality of life. And, the thing that I've recognized, too, is that, and of course, this is just maybe even more anecdotal, so to speak. But, you know, we as a society may be living longer, but what is our quality of life as we're living longer? And I think it's important, like you said, I mean, obviously we all have mortality. I mean, that's a reality. But how do we take care of ourselves early so that even our ending years, quote unquote, so to speak, you know, are healthier, or at least not as severely diminished, or I don't know what the right term would be, but you know what I mean. So I think that's something that's to be considered too.
So much that I see is, I don't have a better term, but I always say self-inflicted. I would say, just to put a number out there, 60% of what I see in the office in terms of quality of life and impact on healthcare is self-inflicted. Lack of physical activity, lack of good nutrition, lack of stress reduction. And I tell my patients, if they did half of what I recommended they do, they probably put me out of business. I probably have to have a second job. But so much of what we do to ourselves. And it's so much that patients can do to take control of their health mm-hmm. and improve their health and their quality of life.
So I want to go back to one of the topics we were talking about just a few minutes ago about when patients see you. And of course, you're talking about being prepared and all that. What other recommendations would you have as far as how to best use that time when they see you? Obviously, you said, you know, ask questions, so forth. But, you know, in that limited time frame, what would you recommend?
First, I would recommend that at the beginning of the appointment, if there are any pressing issues that you have, get them out right up front. As you mentioned, you have a time slot, 15 minutes, 30 minutes if you're lucky. So you want to make sure that you address what concerns you that day right up at the beginning. You don't want to wait until after the 15 or 30 minutes and go, oh, by the way, because I can guarantee you that provider will probably have their hand on the doorknob and ready to open the door. So, you know, right up front, even if you're here for a physical exam, if you have a lesion on your ear or any other concern, address that right up front. So that's one thing I would say. Now, we get kind of nervous when people pull out lists. So when we ask a patient, okay, what's going on? And you pull out a scroll and it rolls down the floor, you know, so you don't want to overwhelm the visit. I would recommend people choose the top two or three concerns if they have them, because you can always, that's the nice thing about having a primary care physician. There's always continuity. You can always reschedule an appointment to address other things. But if you have a particular concern, I would say address that immediately, even if the doctor wants to jump right into the physical exam. Mm. Let them know right up front so that when you leave that appointment, you'll feel that your concerns were addressed.
Excellent. So I'm going to get a little personal here and ask, what do you do, you know, as far as taking care of yourself? I'll confess to our listeners that, you know, we have a room in our building and I see Dr. McDaniel, you know, eating his lunch, and he brings his lunch in and so forth. And so what are some of the practices that you'd have that you follow? Because as the old saying goes, you know, you got to practice what you preach, right? So what do you do?
Regular exercise. And when we say exercise, I don't mean going to a gym. If you want to go to a gym, if you're a gym rat, great. But what you want to do is focus on cardio. So prolonged activity for an extended period of time, 30, 45 minutes, walking. You don't have to power walk. Walking is great exercise. 30, 45 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week. Swimming, bicycling. Try to incorporate the family. So if you have children or your significant other, incorporate them into your exercise. Just kicking a soccer ball around with your kids, or shooting hoops and grabbing rebounds and shooting, or throwing a football, all of that is great activity that will enhance your health. And then nutrition. You have to focus on nutrition and just bring it into balance. I never tell people what they can't eat. I just tell them moderation and improving our nutrition. That's the key. You mentioned there was a study that was done decades ago where they had two groups, two families that needed to lose weight and other problems. And one family, they just told them, prepare a dinner at least 3 to 4 times a week. They didn't tell them what to prepare. And the other family said, keep doing what you're doing, try to lose weight or whatever. And what they found was that the family that just ate at home 3 to 4 times a week had better outcomes in terms of weight loss and other parameters than the family that actually ate out and continued to do what they were doing. So just preparing your own meals, it's probably going to be healthier than running through McDonald's or Burger King or who knows.
And probably, you know, similar costs when you get down to it, right? In the end. So it's a matter of just preparation and so forth. So that's some, yeah. So like I've heard before, and you're reiterating what many people say, but you know, exercise and nutrition, those are just to take care of yourself, just to be healthy. So absolutely. Absolutely. So, are there any other things you would recommend or comments you'd like to make? We're getting ready to close up in a minute here. So any other final, suggestions or things you'd like to say to folks who are listening?
When it comes to exercise, what I try to do, I try to have people incorporate exercise that fits into their lifestyle. So, workplace. I try to get people to, if you have a 15, 30-minute break, to try to do some exercise, whether it be walking, climbing, steps. Because I believe that if it doesn't fit into your lifestyle, even nutrition, if it doesn't fit into your lifestyle, you're not going to continue with it, because I want people to make healthy choices, whether it be exercise, nutrition, for a lifetime. I'm not a believer in diets because diets are fads. So I like people to focus on thinking about how you can maintain whether good nutrition or activity level over a lifetime. It is a lifestyle. And that's what you want to develop, a lifestyle, something that you enjoy. If you're doing an exercise, if you're going to the gym 4 or 5 times a week and it's a chore for you to get there and it doesn't fit into your schedule, you're not going to sustain that over a longer period of time. So you really have to find something that fits into your lifestyle and your schedule and that you enjoy. The same thing with food. If you're on a, I'm just making it up, if you're on a beet diet and you're eating beets for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, granted, you may be achieving the short-term goals that you want, maybe you're losing weight or whatever, but how long are you going to eat beets for?
Right.
So it's about fitting into your lifestyle, developing healthy habits, exercise, and nutrition for a lifetime. So that's what I would recommend. And it's different for different people. There's no one template on what type of exercise you should do and how you're supposed to eat. Consult with your provider or nutritionist, but you want to do something that you know you can stick with for a lifetime, because it's about lifestyle and quality of life and improving our quality of life through healthy eating and exercise.
I'm really glad you said nutritionist, because here at the Community Health Center, we have a nutritionist. We also have a diabetes educator. In fact, Margie Mercero was on our show previously. We did a recording with her. So you're absolutely right. Being able to consult with professionals and get that solid advice is important. And I think in the long run, like you said, sustainability, you know, being able to do things that are healthy and are, for lack of a better term, no pun intended, for the long run. So that's where we're at. So I'd really like to thank you, Dr. McDaniel, for being here. This has been a great conversation. I've learned some things, and I want to thank you for being our guest today on Color Me Healthy. It's a production of the Community Health Center of Buffalo. If you'd like to learn more about the Community Health Center of Buffalo, go to chcb.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram and our podcast channel, Podbean. If you have any comments or show suggestions, you can email us at colormehealthy@chcb.net. For Color Me Healthy, I'm your host, Kyle Shallhorn. Be well.